Hello, my name is Missy Silver on Radio Free Brighton, and in the studio with me today is David Wolfe. He is the director of the Community University Partnerships Programme, which is based in the University of Brighton. Previous to this, he's worked in the community and voluntary sector, in particular to do with homelessness. He's worked in advice and information services and in project management. He's occupied roles as a service delivery worker, a manager, a director and a consultant, and has been the first employee of the Community University Partnerships Programme at the University of Brighton, which is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year. Welcome, David. Thank you very much for coming into the studio to talk to me.
Thanks for inviting me.
Right, what I wanted to do was just inform our listeners really what the Community University Partnerships Programme, CUP for short, double P, is about. You're celebrating your 10th anniversary. You're based in the University of Brighton, but tell me a little bit about how the CUP's programme started.
We started 10 years ago. I think it was really in recognition that there was a bit of a gap about what universities do, particularly in the UK. It's by no means uncommon for universities to work with businesses to help them develop new products, to help them become more profitable, etc. But in this country, at least, it's really rather rare that universities have used their assets and skills and expertise to support communities for social benefit. And I think CUP was established to try and address that gap, really.
I mean, really, if you think about it, it is quite bizarre that you have universities that even take on the name of the area where they're based. So Brighton University, very much taken the Brighton name, and yet it has. They have traditionally, as you say, not shared that knowledge in some way. Why do you think that is?
I think it's a combination of factors, really. I think the way universities have set themselves up to recruit nationally, that they don't particularly have always have a relationship with local students. Students can come from anywhere, although with Brighton University that's not necessarily the case, because we've quite a tradition of working with local teachers, nurses, etc. But vocational element to us, so there is that connection. But often universities don't really see themselves as having that local connection. And I don't think it's been encouraged. It hasn't been encouraged by government policy for universities. And it's just become a kind of a neglected area that, in a way, people often don't even think about as a possibility. But universities are big setups with a lot of skilled people in them, a lot of resource, a lot of facilities. And actually, an awful lot of people, staff and students, are very interested in and motivated towards supporting communities to thrive.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, it is one of those, it's a funny fact, Brighton is an anomaly in so many different areas, but particularly in the fact that so many students who have gone to either Sussex or Brighton University stay in Brighton, don't they?
They do, and that's quite unusual. Yeah.
So they are very much part of the community and have attended the local learning centres. Mm. Tell me about, because I know that CUP was initially started in no small part from a donation from an American benefactor. We were talking about earlier, just before we went on air, how American universities and American culture has a slightly different attitude in its relationship to their communities.
That's correct. I mean, there's a strong tradition in America of universities taking quite a profound role in relation to the development of their local area and their region, and that's really quite common. I think it's just interesting how different places are, really. In some respects it's a good thing, but in other respects I think it relates to probably a less developed set of community organisations in America than here. So it may be to do with the fact that there's less of a need, which could be seen as a good thing. But it's something that has taken off in America. I think you've got incredibly wealthy universities next to incredibly poor areas, and they've seen themselves as having, I suppose, quite a, you might call it a paternal approach, where they see themselves as the need to do good.
Right, I see.
To even out some of the inequalities. We don't...
Would that be paternal or patronising?
Well, it's a bit of both, really. Right. And we don't like to operate in that way. We as in the name, we could see ourselves as being in partnership.
Yeah.
And that we see that there's a possibility that it's not about the university doing good, it's about working together with communities for mutual benefit. This is about mutuality, because we recognise that actually communities know a lot. They can help develop knowledge and research.
Yeah.
They can help provide really vibrant and interesting experiences for students to learn better. So this is a two-way process. That's how we operate.
Okay, so it's a marriage of equals between the university and the community.
Equals is tough. I mean, you know, when you're talking about an institution, an organisation, the size of a university against a tiny community group, it doesn't really feel very equal. So I think we try and be respectful about some of those differences and work with them, and look for mutual goals. I'm not sure we're saying everything's always equal, though. I think we aspire towards that rather than that being necessarily a reality.
But it's good to recognise that that's something that is there and is an issue. So you can,
it is an issue.
You can always have that in your mind and work towards it.
You have to work with it. I think it's naive for us to think that you know, a small volunteer-led community group can feel itself to be on an equal footing with a massive organisation like a university without an awful lot of thought and care going into the relationship. So that's why, one of the reasons why we're really interested in long-term relationships. We might do small pieces of work to get us started, but we want to be working with the communities in 5-10 years' time.
Yeah.
And that in that way, we can kind of grow our relationships together. Yeah. And make them more even.
Yeah, and I'm sure that projects that you have helped initiate are sustained as well.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, 10 years ago, you're celebrating your 10th anniversary in 2013. Mm. So in 2003, we're kind of just into a brand new shiny century. Mm. You were the first employee of the Community University Partnership Programme. What did you first do? How did you first start building your team and developing projects with the community?
Well, it's been a fascinating process, really, because I can't pretend that I was an expert in this area before. I worked in homelessness and in the community and voluntary sector. I've done a degree, but I'm not an academic, and I hadn't even heard of this area of work, really, so I couldn't consider myself an expert.
And it does seem to be a fledgling area of work still, doesn't
in this
it?
Country,
but 10 years ago.
So we were thinking, we had this excellent support from this American philanthropist organisation, which in a way was interesting because that's outside the UK anyway.
Sure.
So they were insightful enough to see it, whereas perhaps it would have been tricky to find those funds within the UK. And it was set up extremely well. Not, I hasten to add, by me. I walked into the new setup, and we had a full year of experimentation at the beginning, an initial 4-year funding, where the idea was to find out what this thing was.
Right, sure.
Because it sounds like a really nice idea, but what is it in practice? And
and
it was very difficult for people to have a concrete sense of this thing. So what we did is my first colleague, we talked to an awful lot of people inside the university and outside the university. What did they think the possibilities were? What did they want? What would be useful to them? And then we tried lots of things. We tried lots of small projects. We had a bit of money to set up things. We initially did 3 pilot projects, and then in the next 2 years, we had something like 40 or so small pieces of work, experimental projects. And then we started to look at what worked well and what the patterns were. And then we were able to say, well, this is what it is. This is how it should work. And we were able to agree about the university with our community partners. We set up a group that comprised of community side people and university people to govern the programme. So to work out where the money was spent, to set up the policy. So we were able to say to them, look, after about 18 months, look, this is what we think the thing could look like. These are the priorities.
That's amazing.
And we went from there.
That's great. I know from personal experience and from speaking to people, often with new projects that have pilots and have funding at the front end, at the beginning, they often produce remarkable results. Mm. But then, inevitably, funding is cut and the workload is doubled and things get tricky. Mm. You've managed to sustain this project for 10 years. Mm. How have you managed that?
There's a lot of factors, I think. I think that one of the main things is it's what people want.
Right.
So it fits with the University of Brighton. It's important to the University of Brighton. It's part of their mission and approach to work with their community.
So you do feel very supported by the
Absolutely.
University.
Absolutely. And that's taken the form of them supporting us financially after the initial funding finished. So the small staff team that we have is paid for by the university.
So that's great. University of Brighton, congratulations for actually putting your money where your mouth is.
Correct. To be fair to the university, it is. It's supporting it in this way, beyond the initial tricky phase, which, as you say, often ends in closure because the money's been found, but the sustainable money can't be. But the other thing that we've tried to do, which I think is really important, is we don't see ourselves as almost something in our own right. We're only there to help the university and community people work together. They're the ones doing the work, not us. So we're a kind of facilitator or a broker. And we've not grown. We're not big. We keep ourselves deliberately small, because any growth should be for the communities and the university people and the projects. So we try and support them to work in an area together and to thrive, rather than to be big ourselves. That isn't an ambition that we have. So I think we've kept to that, and we have kept kind of modest in size. We're not massive. Yeah. There's myself and four development managers and some admin people. That's for the whole university.
So you haven't grown into some monster of administration and red tape, which is very easy for projects like this.
We've really, really tried very hard to avoid that. We are a part of the administration of the university, but we sit in the academic school with the staff and students, and we go around the place. We don't separate ourselves off, and we haven't got big and bloated in a way. Makes the work a bit tricky because there's not many of us. But as I say, the point of it all is to enable useful activity that's mutually beneficial to the university and to the community to happen. So
And talking about something like that, I just want to talk to you about one of your first projects, the Access to Art project. So I think it's a really good example of the type of work you do and how it can be mutually beneficial, like you say, to the people on the community and for the people within the university. So could you tell me more about that?
Sure. It's one of our, I'd say, kind of spectacularly successful projects, really. It's absolutely brilliant. And it does, as you say, illustrate the kind of mutual benefit that we're really looking for. So it's a good example in that sense. And it was just about our very first ever project 10 years ago, and it's been successfully running ever since. The basic issue, the problem to be resolved, if you like, was that a local charity called Carousel recognised that the community they work with, artists with learning disabilities, were not well served by education and higher education in particular, and weren't really being encouraged to develop their artwork. So they approached the School of Art, who responded very favourably, and we worked with them to set up this scheme that we've called called Access to Art, and that was a development art experience, learning experience for artists with learning disabilities. And it's really been spectacularly successful. I mean, there's been numerous groups of artists that have been involved in the programme, and they've done all sorts of things. They've sell their work, they've set up exhibitions, they've had exhibitions at the Tate Modern, they've done international work, they've made films, extraordinary work, really, and absolutely beautiful work they've created. But the model that was set up was that each of the artists with learning disabilities would have a kind of learning advocate who's a second year art student operating as part of their course, not in a voluntary capacity. And what's been really interesting about it is how much that group have benefited too. And they've, because they're having to do things that is very unusual for them, they're having to explain how to draw to someone with very different communication requirements. And they found that very useful in their own learning.
Developing their own practice.
Absolutely. So, you know, you look at them and you kind of can't work out who's benefiting the most.
Yeah.
And it's absolutely marvellous. And on top of that, the School of Art has now developed this whole area of inclusive arts, they call it, as a research area. There's now a master's programme to help practitioners work in this area. It's all new and all to do with this original project.
So from that first contact between you and Carousel...
And Carousel and the School of Art, more crucially.
And the School of Art. There you go, facilitating, not claiming credit. And so there have been a group of artists who have learning disabilities who have been able to make a career from their art. You have a group of students who have been able to develop their art and their teaching skills, and you actually have a master's course developed through the university through that one contact.
Indeed. And that's, I wouldn't say...
That's a massive mushrooming effect. Yeah.
We have 200 inquiries a year from communities, and they don't all turn into that.
Of course,
we probably have half a dozen areas which have developed over time into that kind of area, so I wouldn't want to give it unrealistic expectations. But what we find is sometimes it can be quite difficult to get started when we get approached with a huge variety of potential pieces of work and can't work out, is it a research project, is it a student project? We're not quite sure. So it takes a little while sometimes. But if we can work together in the long term, we often find some really useful things.
So who can contact you? Is it just... established organisations and groups and charities?
No, anyone who's working who's working for in a not-for-profit kind of context for social benefit.
So it could be an individual with an idea?
Could be an individual. Most commonly it is organisations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's often a helpful kind of partnership shape, really.
Yeah.
But we don't make, it can be, we get contacts from the public sector, from local authorities, from health authorities, and from tiny unfunded community groups, from well-established voluntary organisations, social enterprises, across the needs groups and across the community.
And do they come to you with kind of fully formed ideas or vague concepts or both? Somewhere in between?
Both. And either is fine. I mean, sometimes people come to us with incredibly work through funded projects for major pieces of work, and they want something very specific, they know exactly what they want. But at other times, it's actually very difficult for people outside of a university to know what's even there.
Absolutely.
So it's hard, we don't mind if they're not sure.
Yeah.
And if it's a relatively vague sense that groups say things like to us that we've been working with a particular neighbourhood for some time. We're not sure we're up to date with what they need. Can you help us? Or can you help us develop our organisation? Or we're struggling for funding. What can we do about it? And there's all sorts of different ways these can be taken forward. So we'll sit down with them and try and work out whether there's a concrete piece of work between them and the university.
I think Brighton and Hove does have a particularly strong voluntary and community sector.
It does, yeah.
Are there other organisations in other parts of the country that have developed a model like yours?
Or there's some.
Do you think it can roll out?
There's some. I don't have any doubt that it can roll out. And there's been various attempts. I think the picture nationally is patchy. And there's people do things in different ways, and there's some really good stuff out there, but it's not comprehensive. And I think probably that relates to the structures of how universities are funded and what they're encouraged to do and what they're not encouraged to. So it's really down to individual universities at the moment whether this is an important area for them. And that's how it works.
Well, the fact that you're celebrating your 10th anniversary this year, you're having a do on the 8th of July. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yeah, indeed. It's people are welcome to come along to it if you go onto our website, which is www.cuwp.org.uk. You'll see the notice there, and people are welcome to come along if they want to book onto that. I mean, basically, it's really a celebration of particularly for those who've been involved in the programme to date, which goes into thousands of people one way or another. So we're going to have a talk from someone called David Watson, who was the Vice Chancellor at Brighton at the time, who set up the scheme, and he's coming back.
Oh, that's
wonderful. And he's an expert in this kind of area, so it'll be really interesting to hear his thoughts about that. And what we're also trying to do is think about what the ideal future would look like. Because we think we've made some quite good progress, but we're absolutely certain there's a long way to go.
Absolutely. Have you got any aims about what you want to achieve?
What we want to do is work as a community, working together, to say, well, what would the ideal be? And we're not looking for a kind of high-level strategy document that very few people can understand and no one reads. What we wanted to be able to describe is what actually people would do in the perfect environment of communities and university working together. So a day in the life of the future of University of Brighton and local communities.
And that just makes things so accessible, doesn't it?
Because I've
seen those documents, and I'm actually quite glad you said that, because I've always thought, who reads these things, who understands these things, who writes these things even?
Indeed.
And it does make it very inaccessible and very elitist to have those documents.
Correct.
So that's an absolutely amazing idea to have, to boil it right down to... I remember my friend, she got a very posh job, and she was talking the jargon, as most people do when they go into any new career. Start talking the jargon. And I said, no, Alice, you have to tell me. What do? You go in the morning, you make a cup of tea, you switch on your computer. What do you do from there?
Exactly.
So that's what...
That's absolutely it, to make it practical about actual activity you'd imagine. And then we can say, OK, if that's what we think we want, where are we now? And what are the barriers? And how do we step-by-step try and remove them? We haven't done it yet. That's what the event will be, and we're doing other work around that. So we hope by the end of the year we can have something written down that's accessible for people to look at, that describes what the ideal situation would be like in practice.
Well, congratulations, David, on the work that you've achieved in the past 10 years working for the Community University Partnership Programme. All the details about the programme are on your website, which is www.cuwp.org.uk. We'll have details published on the Radio Free Brighton website, which is www.radiofreebrighton.org.uk. I wish you very well for the 8th of July for your 10th anniversary celebrations. Congratulations, and I wish you every success in the future.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Cheers.